First Take, your take on ESPN Radio, the ESPN app, Sirius XM, Channel 80, and ESPN News, also on your smart speakers. I'm Jason Fitz. We're presented by Progressive Insurance, and let's start off with the headlines that you need to know. Get a little positivity coming. The Premier League is going to come back. They're returning June 17th after a 100-day break amid coronavirus. Obviously, the break has been something we've all had our eyes on, but now they're set to return. June 17th, the clubs gave, quote, Project Restart the green light at a shareholders meeting on Thursday. Sources have told ESPN that Manchester City versus Arsenal and Aston Villa at home to Sheffield United will be the first fixtures, taking all teams to 29 matches played. The remaining 90 games will then continue from the following weekend, with the match likely to be moved for television on Friday, the 19th of June, preceding a full program. So they're going to get right back into it. They're going to give us a full slate. We've got some positivity. All sports eyes will be on what that means. And the next headline, not quite as positive. Major League Baseball Players Association are expected to counter MLB's economic proposal by the end of the week, with a plan that includes more than 100 games and a guarantee of full prorated salaries for the 2020 season. Sources familiar with union discussions have told ESPN. Jeff Passan has a great article out there on ESPN.com breaking down some of the disagreements over economics. This is getting loud, and obviously the players are speaking out. Max Scherzer went to social media to talk about it. All eyes are going to be on how this gets resolved. Major League Baseball Players Association resolution would essentially be to lock in all of the prorated salaries they've already agreed to, but then to play more games. So we'll see what that means moving forward. Like any negotiation, there will be several other steps. And lastly, on the news front, University of Minnesota made a surprising decision to some today, and a statement, let's say it that way. University of Minnesota has limited their ties now with Minneapolis police. This is a reaction to the awful death of George Floyd that we talked about a little bit yesterday. 2 days after that death, which was caused by the police officers on the scene from Minnesota, the University of Minnesota announced it will limit its relationship moving forward with the Minneapolis Police Department. So the school president came out and announced Wednesday in a letter sent to students, faculty, and staff members that the university will no longer use local officers to assist at major events that would include Golden Gophers football games. So a big statement there coming back from the University of Minnesota. Those are the headlines that you need. It's First Take, your take on ESPN Radio, ESPN News. I'm Jason Fitz. We're going to get into a little bit of NBA conversation. Although, again, tip of the hat to yesterday. Took a big chance. I'm not going to lie. Took a big chance. Asked you guys the hockey question, and the lines were lit up. So let's see if we've got that same fervor going again today when we get back to the NBA for the discussion for you guys. You know that we've been going through the primetime players. The primetime player conversation that you'll hear a little later today in the show got everybody talking about young talent. And it raises a really interesting question about what young – you get one young player in the NBA – to build your franchise around. Let's say 25 or under. You get one young player to build your franchise around. Who's it going to be and why? 888-SAY-ESPN, 888-729-3776. When you look across that list, I mean, Giannis Antetokounmpo is 25 years old, but then you start talking about Luka Doncic is 21, Zion's 19, Jason Tatum, Ben Simmons, Karl Anthony Towns, Donovan Mitchell, Ja Morant, where's he falling? This Trae Young, there are a ton of young, talented players in the NBA. So you get one young, talented player to pick. Who's it going to be and why? 888-SAY-ESPN, 888-729-3776. That's how you get your take in. You can also tweet me at Jason Fitz. First Take, your take, presented by Progressive Insurance. We're going to head to some Straight Talk. Straight Talk Wireless doesn't play games. Get the unlimited plan. 25 gigs of high-speed data, then 2G, and it's only $45 a month. Saves you up to 50% against the big carriers. No contracts, no compromise. Savings may vary. See terms and conditions at straighttalk.com, and we will get straight to the Straight Talk from Max and Dominique Foxworth as they had this debate with the primetime players. They've got Giannis Antetokounmpo to talk about today as our number two player. So if you're building a team, is Giannis actually your number one pick?
The second player in our First Take Primetime Players NBA ranking is Bucks forward Giannis Antetokounmpo.
Here's a lob for Giannis in transition. No contest at the rim.
The Greek freak is the only player in NBA history with 4,000 rebounds and 2,000 assists before turning 25 years old.
And Giannis will launch another three. Good again.
He's only one of two players to win MVP and make first team all defense. Also before the age of 25, joining LeBron James.
They had nobody that could stop the freight train known as Giannis.
Player number two, Bucks forward, Giannis Antetokounmpo.
I would. I'd take Giannis first. Apologies to Zion and Luka Doncic. I understand the arguments for both of them. But I think the argument for Giannis would be overlooked in that case. First of all, he's 25 years old. And it's not like he has a ton of wear and tear. Until recently, like, he started out 24, 25 minutes a game, 30, 31 minutes a game, and kept improving and kept improving as a player. And there's a phenomenon in sports I want to talk about where you see guys at a certain age perform at a certain level, like Luka right now. And the assumption is, given that, given how much better they were than player B, let's say, at the same age, boy, the trajectory of their career is going to take them past that guy. But very few players who ever started at any level at any age ever get as good as Giannis is right now. He's about to be the back-to-back league MVP. I mean, that's what's about to happen. So I think of like KD and LeBron. KD is going to take over from LeBron. Never happened. KD, like, I never looked at KD and said he's better than LeBron now. And given the injury now, given how LeBron's still playing, I don't think it's going to happen. I think about a shortstop in New York, you know, a decade ago, 15 years ago. Jose Reyes was this phenom with the Mets, and he was an all-star. And Jeter was on the back nine of his career. Oh, Reyes is going to take over as the New York shortstop from Jeter. Really? Because Jeter was on an all-star team in New York after Reyes ever was, later than he ever was. Because some guys are performing at a certain level that it doesn't matter where the other guy starts and what you think his trajectory might be. It's very unlikely that anyone gets to that level. Let's take Giannis. Offensively, even without a shot, he is impossible, right? Like, if his handles were a little bit better and he hit the three a little bit more, he'd be the best player who ever lived already. Like, when I survey the landscape and people say, this guy's going to surpass Jordan, that guy, I don't see anyone in their primes that's going to do that. I think the closest I've seen is Giannis, who's 7 feet, who takes it hard to the hole. And by the way, is now shooting about 5 threes a game and hitting over 30% of them. If that picks up, if that becomes 35%, good freaking luck. Defensively, he's a monster. You can design your team defensively around him, to say nothing of the offense. And he's 25. And given how late guys are playing into their careers nowadays, 10 years from now, Luka and Zion, 30, 31 years old, you're sure they're going to be better than Giannis at 35? Giannis is already a team-carrying MVP player. We want to see if he can become a championship player now. And the other guys, though younger, are not on that level and may never be.
You make a great point, and I really hate doing these type of debates because it feels like you have to argue against a guy that you absolutely believe in, which Giannis, I'm sure we all believe in Giannis, but maybe I'm just going to fall into the basketball hipster trap and go with Luka, because I think you said that Giannis was impossible to guard. That's not true. Like, the whole story on Giannis is that there is a way to stop him, and people and teams have proven that in the playoffs. And I understand your point.
With your whole team?
Maybe Luka, I understand your point. Maybe Luka never gets better than he is right now. Right now, he's averaging 39-9. Like, that's fine. Don't get any better. So if he doesn't get any better, where he is right now is fine. And I do think that both of those guys have shortcomings. Neither of them are perfect players. So if you're going to build your team around Giannis, you're going to have to find somebody who can close games with the ball in their hands, because I think Giannis has not proven that he can do that yet. And you're right. Maybe he'll get better, but I'll use your own argument against you. We may not see that ever happen, because you said that players who start off great may not grow in anything. So maybe Giannis never develops the ball handling and the shooting ability to close games. You're going to have to bring in a wing player, because as much as athletic as Giannis is, he's not a true wing. He's a big man who can play on the wing, which is different than KD, who's a 7-footer who plays on the wing. So you're going to have to bring in someone to close games if you're going to win championships. And I agree with Luka. You're going to have to bring in some defensive help, because he is deficient on that end of the floor. I think it's easier to find people to support Luka defensively than it is to find somebody that you can rely on to close games with Giannis.
First Take, your take on ESPN Radio, ESPN News. I'm Jason Fitz. That's an interesting point as you try and figure out how to build out. And look, I know I've asked a good question when everybody on Twitter says it's easy, but then gives me a different answer. We're asking you guys to chime in. What young player would you build your NBA franchise around? Let's say 25 and under. That I'm getting asked what the age line is. So let's say 25 and under, getting a lot of tweets for Ja Morant. Maybe I've just got a lot of Memphis people following me, but a lot of tweets for Ja Morant. Drew says, hands down, no brainer, Ja Morant. But then Keith says Zion, and then Josh says Luka, hands down. Everybody figures that this one is easy. To me, you do have to look at some of what Dominique just talked about. You have to look at how you're going to build your team. I feel like the physical presence of Giannis Antetokounmpo at 25 years old just in my mind means that he can dominate anybody for as long as he so shall choose, right? But if you're looking for somebody that you can put better weapons around or easily build a team around, Luka makes a lot of sense for that discussion also. But how do we value Ja Morant, somebody that had Memphis way ahead of schedule, and we haven't really seen any of Zion? So it's a reminder through it all that the NBA is stacked when it comes to talent at a young age. That's, I think, the most impressive part of the conversation. Todd in North Dakota, what do you got? What's your take on young NBA players?
I think you got to go Giannis Antetokounmpo. You know, the argument that you can build defensive players around Luka doesn't really stick for me. I'm living up here, I'm a Timberwolves fan, and hearing Carl Anthony Towns' name mentioned, it's certainly not him. They've tried to put defense around him for his whole career, and he hasn't won anything up here. So with a guy like Giannis, and Max made the point, he's making 30% of his three-pointers now. Maybe he is a guy that can close by attacking the rim like we watched LeBron do for however many championships in a row he went to. 9, was it?
Well, I think that's – thanks for your take on it. I think a big part of it is that physical. Maybe in my mind I just assign Giannis looks – I mean, the Greek freak, obviously, but he looks so huge that in my mind I see sort of LeBron-like capability to just be the big guy that's able to take everybody out because he's such a specimen on it. So maybe that's part of, like, in my mind I'm doing some association there. Bruce in Virginia. Bruce, what do you got? What's your take on this one?
What's up, man? I appreciate you taking my call. Without question, I'm going to go Greek freak. And I'm going to provide you three supporting documentations to support my answer. First and foremost, we just had The Last Dance on. Greek freak is the closest Bill specimen to Scottie Pippen, and he can play both sides of the ball. My second take on it is Greek freak, because of his play, I picked both the East Conference to win the chip the last 2 years. So not only last year, even though Toronto won it, I picked the East Conference to win last year, and I'm picking them again this year. My third take is I'm from Petersburg, Virginia, and quiet as kept, Trent Mason, former point guard for Kansas, will be that distributor that will keep Greek Freak happy during the playoffs this year. So I got three supporting docs to say we got to go with Greek Freak. Thank you for taking my call.
Bruce, I love that, man. Bruce is coming in with the receipts. I'll take that every day. I mean, you start talking about what Giannis is capable of, and look, we became so infatuated during the NBA season with all things LA, whether it was the Clippers or the Lakers, that we watched the Bucks go through it. And if you're new to me in general, I was the guy that was yelling about the Bucks all season long, saying, why aren't we talking more about them? I think they're incredible. And that's largely because of Giannis. I think they are a championship caliber team. So trying to figure out how all of that pieces together, you know, I'm here to give Giannis all the credit in the world. We're going to keep taking your take. 888-SAY-ESPN, 888-729-3776. Got to be 25 or under. Which player would you build your NBA franchise around? ESPN Radio, presented by Progressive Insurance. At Progressive, they're making things even easier. Help you bundle your car and home insurance together so you can save on both. Learn more at progressive.com or 1-800-PROGRESSIVE. We're going to move over to a progressive conversation about the NFL now. ESPN NFL insider Diana Rossini joins us. Diana, first and foremost, holy cow, I haven't gotten to talk to you since, I don't know, like a little social media announcement there. You got a big old rock on your finger now. Congratulations.
Thank you. I consider it to be a pebble, but my fiance would say it's a rock as well. But I don't know. I guess we could debate it. But no, yeah, it's been a great few days. We haven't broken up yet, so I think we're on a good path here.
That is incredible. I'm happy for you. I can't imagine wedding planning in a quarantine. So you know what? I'll pour one out for you every time I drink, and just to, you know, I'm here for you from a distance.
To
laugh through that process.
It is not. I feel, look, there are bigger issues in the world. We know this. Wedding planning is not definitely on a top 5,000 list of important things, but it certainly makes it difficult to figure out what you want to do when everything in your state is shut down. So I don't know. Maybe we'll just elope one day when we're allowed to travel and do all that stuff. So until then, we got tons of football to get to.
Yeah, you know, until then, that's, I was going to say, what the really world really cares about is your hot takes on the Buffalo Bills. You went on TV and said that you think the Buffalo Bills are the team to beat in the East. Why?
I love that you call it a hot take, because, like, all of social media was like, this is, like, the coolest take ever. It's not that shocking. Tom Brady left. Duh. it's a little bit of both. It's obviously because Tom Brady left, and the Patriots are still going to have to try to figure out what they're going to do with the quarterback spot. They have their identity. It's what Bill Belichick wants them to be. It's whether or not Jared Stidham can really deal with the and handle the pressure. And if Brian Hoyer is going to be used at all, I mean, we know Brian Hoyer was brought in there because he's so comfortable with that system, but it reading the tea leaves, it seems like this is going to be Stidham's gig to lose. But, you know, covering the Bills so much last year and even covering those games when the Bills played the Patriots, there were a lot of dumb penalties and mistakes made by Buffalo when they lost to New England. They should have won those games. And from a culture standpoint of what they're building there, what they can do on defense, even some of the obviously added additions on offense with Stephon Diggs and Josh Allen's development, I think the Bills actually have more consistency top to bottom at this point. That I think this is the year after 11 division titles that the Patriots sort of, they get dethroned.
ESPN NFL insider Diana Rossini joining us on First Take. Your take. I'm Jason Fitz. And, you know, I agree with everything you just said, and I think the Bills are the favorite there. I have one hesitation, and I want to get your thoughts on it. And it revolves around the amount of pressure that there will be on Josh Allen this year, because it feels like up to this point, Bills fans have sort of bonded by him as the world doesn't respect him enough, right? But now there are so many weapons on that offense. I think there's a different level of pressure going straight towards Josh Allen. I mean, at some point, what's your level of concern of Josh Allen continuing not only to grow, but also being able to handle higher level of scrutiny from what's expected of him?
Well, we know, we've been covering this league long enough to know that talent's not enough. You need the talent, but you also need the execution and the discipline. And I feel like McDermott's team has proved that they're up for that challenge. But more importantly, I have been saying this for years, when the Bills brought in Brian Daboll as the offensive coordinator, I thought that was actually one of their best moves they made in terms of hiring. When they brought him in, seeing what he did in Alabama, knowing his reputation. I know tons of players and even assistant coaches who worked with Dave, and they've all shared essentially his ability to see detail and to teach it, right? There's always a difference between coaches that can see it and understand it, but to explain it and implement it is a completely different layer to coaching. Which is why I think some of the best coaches I've ever covered, they don't even call themselves coaches. They call themselves teachers, because that's essentially what they're doing. And I think Josh Allen's relationship with Brian Daboll over the last two seasons has grown so much. And the confidence that Allen has grown from respecting the knowledge he's been given, and understanding that this play calling is going to do nothing but help him. And now with the weapons, this is the year that I think that Josh Allen can really take those steps forward.
We're talking to Diana Rossini on First Take, Your Take. I'm Jason Fitz, and we can't have a quarterback conversation without talking about Baker, it seems. But we haven't heard as much from Baker Mayfield this year as a year ago right now. It felt like he was constantly in the news. Now it's been very quiet. What's that say to you?
It says that he is doing this on purpose. I think Baker Mayfield has had flair and swag and every word you want to describe for being an outgoing, in-your-face competitor, which I do believe some of that is great. I'm into that. I think it's great for the sport. I think it's authentic to who he is. But I think he went a little overboard over the last two seasons. It is so difficult to do that many commercials, to do that many interviews with gigantic magazines and sports outlets, even with us at ESPN, and then go out and have a losing season. And Baker, it seems, is learning that the best way to be right now is silent. Silence is golden when you're a quarterback and you're the face of this franchise, because he's got nothing to stand on right now. College years are over. They've done nothing to show that they are a playoff winning team at this point. And he acknowledged it yesterday on a call with reporters that I'm not talking about anything anymore, because expectations have done nothing but hurt them. We all thought that they were going to go to the playoffs last year when they signed Odell Beckham Jr. in the offseason, and that did nothing. Obviously. And if anything, the team regressed. Four head coaches in two seasons, his third season. He knows it's a big year. I'm on the outside looking in, obviously, at this point, but it just looks like they're putting together a roster and a culture under Kevin Stefanski that is to lift up Baker Mayfield. They got him protection in free agency with Jack Conklin and in the draft. They got him a tight end. In Austin Hooper, they obviously have the running back tandem made up of Nick Chubb and Kareem Hunt, which you could argue is the best, the best two backs in the league right now. So I think on paper this team is built to win, and they look a lot like the way Minnesota did when Stefanski was calling the plays there. So when you look at that and you look at how they built it within the building, what they're trying to preach, and then now Baker's being quiet, showing maturity here, this is a really good start, a great formula for this team to potentially be really good.
Well, and on top of that, I think we've all overcorrected. So many people were so hyped on the Browns last year. Now that they were hurt by that, it feels like everybody's too quiet on them this year. If you just look at that team on paper, incredibly talented. And speaking of incredibly talented, that's Diana. Follow her on Twitter, at DianaESPN. As always, I appreciate your time, my friend. If you need, you know, a violinist to help you get down the aisle, I know a guy. That, you know, I'm just saying.
Ooh, I
know a guy.
I didn't even think of that. I'll call you.
Congratulations again, Diana. Thanks for hanging out with us. Appreciate you, my friend.
Thanks, Jay.
Great stuff from Diana. Tune into the ESPN Daily Podcast. Gets you a deep dive into a single story from one of ESPN's hundreds of reporters. Presented by Marathon. Download, subscribe, and review ESPN Daily. Available wherever you enjoy your podcast. We're going to keep this Browns conversation going. Obviously, we're taking your take on young players in the NBA. That's going to be throughout the show. But coming up next, how important is the 2020 season for Baker Mayfield? First Take broke it down, and you'll want to hear what they have to say. First Take, your take. ESPN Radio, ESPN News. First Take, your take on ESPN Radio, the ESPN app, Sirius XM, Channel 80. I'm Jason Fitz. We're presented by Progressive Insurance. We're asking you guys to chime in. What 25-year or older, younger player, what young player, 25 or under, would you build your NBA franchise around? 888-SAY-ESPN, 888-729-3776, 888-729-3776. Getting a variety of answers. Like, everybody says it's a simple question, but getting a lot of love on Twitter still for Ja Morant, getting a lot of love for Zion. Not sure how we quantify that. We've seen so little of Zion, but you can't tell me that the NBA isn't looking at more teams in the playoffs just to squeeze Zion in there. But we'll keep taking your take, 888-SAY-ESPN. Also, don't forget the All-In Challenge fundraiser continues to support organizations feeding those in need with really cool sports experiences you can bid on to enter to win. So one of the some of these opportunities, they change all the time. But right now, they've got a 3-day fishing trip down in Bama with Bo. You can go fish with Bo Jackson. Here's the thing. I'm not a good, fishing never going to be my thing. Everybody that knows me knows that I'm just not a country boy at all when it comes to that stuff. And, I'm not a out there roughing it guy at all. And the little worms on the hooks, no, I'm out on that totally. So Bo would have to put the worm on the hook for me to fish. But you can get a 3-day fishing trip with Bo Jackson in Bama. Also, there's a chance to be Don Mattingly's co-manager for the day with the Miami Marlins. How awesome is that? Or you can script the first 15 plays for a Cleveland Browns postseason or preseason game. Postseason game would be more interesting. Script the first 15 plays for a Browns preseason game. Be hysterical if somebody just went in with the same play 15 straight times. Whatever. Remember, 100% of the money raised benefits organizations providing food to those in need. If you want to participate or learn more, visit allinchallenge.com. It's an awesome opportunity to go out there and make a difference. Before we get back to your take on young NBA players, First Take had an NFL debate. We talked to Diana Rossini earlier about Baker Mayfield and the fact that Baker's been very quiet because he understands that the more he talks, the more expectations are raised, and that seems to come back to bite the Browns. So that leads to an interesting Browns conversation because Dominique Foxworth, Max, and Tannenbaum all joined together to talk about whether or not this season is make or break for Baker.
I think it's enormously important. It's the third year of his contract, which is when teams decide whether they're going to exercise the fifth-year option or not. And you can look over to Chicago to see what's happened there. They decided not to exercise that option, and they brought in some competition in Nick Foles. So I think at the end of this season, if Baker has shown some progress and some consistency, I think they'll obviously exercise the fifth-year option. If he goes completely in the tank, then I think that they may not, and they'll be looking for a new quarterback there because we all know this roster is built to win now. They've gone and spend a lot of money to win now, and we heard the rumors that apparently they were going after Jadeveon Clowney to make that defense even better. So they're trying to win immediately, so they're going to look for a veteran quarterback that can make that happen if Baker Mayfield doesn't prove that he's the guy. So I think he will, but maybe not. I have faith in Baker. The only thing I have, only issue I have with Baker right now is the idea that he believes that somehow talking trash and playing can't coexist. I want the old Baker back. Talk that talk and throw them touchdowns. Don't throw interceptions, but keep talking that talk. I don't want a silent, more mature Baker. That's not maturity. Being quiet isn't maturity, and it certainly ain't fun.
Baker is on the verge of being considered a bust.
And I don't think he's going to be a bust. And we've seen in recent years more than usual, I think. I think about Blake Bortles, who went from bust to, oh, maybe he's not, and then ultimately it didn't work out, but he had a little moment there. Tannehill, also kind of a bust, and then look at this. Tannehill's pretty good. We've seen that. We'll see what happens with Winston and Mariota, who at this moment I think have to be considered busts. You know, I'm talking about first-round picks, and in Baker's case, first overall picks. He had actually a good second half of the year 2 years ago, a very good one. In fact, he was elite in the second half. Remember, coming out of college, one of the reasons that he got drafted one overall, which was atypical, usually a guy like Darnold, because he checked more boxes than Baker Mayfield, would have gone number one. But when you looked at how the college numbers projected to the pros, Baker projected to be elite, really was the only one. He goes number one, and in the second half of the year, after Hugh Jackson got fired and Kitchens came in, and they ran a lot of 12 personnel group, you know, one running back, two tight ends, he started doing really well, like as almost as well as anyone in the league for the second half of the season. Yes, they had a soft schedule. There's no doubt about that. I'm sure some teams let down even playing the Browns after the first half of the season. But when I've seen a guy operate on an elite level that early in his career in the NFL, even with all those caveats, I have to believe there's something there. So I have not given up on Baker yet. I think given the right situation, he can be an excellent quarterback because I've already seen it over half a year. But, you know, all that said, it is a crucially important season for him. Even if the Browns don't make the playoffs, guys, like, you know, with the Ravens and the Steelers in the division, we have to see improvement from Baker Mayfield this season. A lot of pressure.
I don't see greatness in Baker Mayfield, and I was wrong. When he was coming out, we worked him out. I really liked him, guys, but what are we hanging our hat on? He's height deficient. He's speed deficient. Last year, when he rolled out of the pocket, he was 17 of 59 with six sacks. He can't outrun athletic defensive ends. So I don't know what we're going to hang our hat on to say that he's going to be a great player. Max, you alluded to guys like Ryan Tannehill. I was around Ryan. He's bigger, he's stronger, he's more athletic. This team's had an excellent offseason in terms of addressing the tackles and Jedrick Wills, Jack Conklin. They acquired Austin Hooper before the draft. So I think they've done a lot of things to help him. This is critically important, but at the end of the day, I just don't see the skill set at the NFL level to say we're going to have sustained greatness. Drew Brees is really the closest comp, and he has an ideal situation in New Orleans with a great offensive line, a great play caller in Sean Payton. And I think Baker Mayfield has a chance to be good, but I never see him being great. And I think at the end of this year, it's going to be a critical decision for Cleveland, and I wouldn't be surprised if they would move on from him.
First, take your take on ESPN News. Think about what Mike Tannenbaum just said there. I keep wanting to call Mike Ryan Tannehill today. I'm having a day, Nashville. All right, so think about what Mike just said there. At the end of the day, they could see him moving on from him at the end of the year if it doesn't go well. Think about that moment. This is an important reminder for every fan base that has a young quarterback. You've got to temper your expectations a little bit and give it time to cook before you figure out what you've got. So much of a year ago right now, the conversation was why Baker Mayfield was the future of the NFL, why Baker Mayfield is a star, why Baker Mayfield is the sort of person that was going to take the Browns to tremendous heights for a generation, right? Like, that's what we want to do. We take some level of success and we turn it into something bigger than what it is instead of being patient. Look, I talked to Diana Rossini earlier today about Josh Allen and the Bills' approach. Look at how measured they've been in the growth and the hype around Josh Allen. It has been a step-by-step process for them. Unfortunately for Baker, it went so big so fast. It flamed out so fast. It's like cooking. All they did was cook the outside and the inside didn't get done. Right, so now what do you end up with? You end up with the quarterback issue. This is a statement for Jets fans, for Giants fans, for everybody that has a quarterback that's in their first 3 or 4 years. You don't know what you have. Truly. As much as you want to know what you have, as much as you can take a small body of work and say, this is proof positive that we're set at the quarterback position, look across the board. And I constantly have used Jameis Winston and Marcus Mariota as reminders. Hell, you know I'm a Raiders fan. Derek Carr's a reminder of this too. You can have a great season. You can have a great moment. You can have the type of moment that absolutely takes all of the fans and hypes them to a different level. You can have that. And it doesn't mean that you have sustainable success that will change the course of your franchise. It takes time to figure out if that's what you actually have. There was a point in time where the Buccaneers believed that they had their quarterback of the future. There was a time when the Titans believed that Marcus Mariota was going to be their quarterback that would take them to new heights. those times existed for those fan bases. And I'm not 100% certain that we won't eventually say there was a time the world believed in Baker Mayfield. We don't know yet. What we do know is that if there's anything you can take away from Baker and how hot the fire was and how cool it feels like it is now, if there's any takeaway, it's don't let yourself with your favorite team and your favorite quarterback fall for that trick again. Be measured, be patient, and give the one thing that's hard to give to figure out is time. Be willing to give your favorite team's quarterback enough time to figure out if he's great before you heap those expectations on him. First Take, Your Take on ESPN Radio, ESPN News. I'm Jason Fitz. Navy Federal Credit Union has a mission to put members first by making their financial goals a priority. Learn more at NavyFederal.org and join today. You guys are the priority for us here. We're getting your take. What young player would you build your NBA franchise around? Everybody on Twitter asking what young is. So we're saying 25 or under. Austin in West Virginia, what do you got? What player are you building your franchise around?
I got to say Zion Williamson, simply from like a owner's standpoint, because he's going to sell tickets for a pretty long time. And he's going to put butts in the seat. It's going to equate to longevity and success eventually.
Does it concern you that we haven't seen a lot of Zion yet in the NBA?
Not exactly, no, because of the immense amount of hype that he had just coming out of high school and the amount of hype that he had at Duke. I feel like as long as he can stay moderately healthy, then he will have a very successful career.
I love your take on it. Thanks for the take. I hadn't thought of it in a capitalistic way, but you're right. I mean, if you're an owner building an NBA franchise, you don't know if you're going to win championships, but you know if you've got a star, you can put butts in seats. So I'll take that all day. David in Ontario, what do you got? What's your take?
I got Jason Tatum because
tell me
you
why.
See the way the league is run every thinking faster than I'm speaking. Every team has won a championship. If you go back the last 10 years, the best player on that team has been that athletic, scoring, two-way wing that can play D.
What do you got? What's your take?
All right, we'll take that one. I mean, we're getting a lot of social media love for Jason Tatum. Absolutely out there. People are obviously fawning over him, and obviously he has a lot of profile with where he plays. Steven in Utah, what do you got on this one? Who are you building your NBA franchise around?
I'm taking Trae Young. I'm taking him because, one, this at the end of the season, after 60 games, he was averaging 29.6 points per game, which is fourth in the NBA. And I think he's comparable to Steph Curry. If you take him and put him with another shooter, defender like Klay Thompson or another forward, that's an easy championship-caliber team right there.
Oh, thanks for your take on it. Look, one of the guys that works on our show, Connor, is a big Hawks fan, so he's all in for this. And I got to be the first to admit, I was really wrong on Trae Young coming out. I didn't think he was going to be as spectacular as he is, and I'm not sure now he gets as much love as he deserves for what he's capable of doing. So this is all just a reminder, by the way, of how much talent there is under the age of 25. We're going to keep taking your take on what young player, 25 or under, you'd build your NBA franchise around. 888-SAY-ESPN, 888-729-3776. We'll get into your take, plus one of you guys disagrees with what I have to say strongly, so we'll let you get that in, and some talk about quarterbacks and whether or not they're elite. First Take's going to get into it. You'll hear it next. First Take, Your Take on ESPN Radio. First Take, Your Take on ESPN Radio, the ESPN app, Sirius XM, Channel 80. I'm Jason Fitz. We're presented by Progressive Insurance. If you missed any of the show today, go check it out. The first hour is on demand and the First Take, Your Take podcast brought to you by the Capital One Saver Card. Earn 4% cash back on dining and entertainment. Then you get 2% at grocery stores and 1% on all other purchases. What's in your wallet? I'll tell you this. I love it when somebody doesn't like something I say. Then we get to have a spirited debate. Robert in Vegas, let's get your take in. I hear that you don't like something I said earlier. Let's go, buddy.
I mean, come on, bro. Literally, the whole LeBron, like, why are we debating him versus MJ? Come on, man. That is the lamest, safest take. It's not even a take. That's insane.
How can you compare two players that played in different eras? How can you realistically compare two guys that played in completely different NBAs?
So you're saying they're not comparable, right?
Correct.
All right. I agree with that. LeBron will never be MJ. The debate shouldn't be happening at all. We agree on that, but for completely different reasons. I'm saying at some point in time, it is possible that the debate could happen. If LeBron wins three more, that debate could happen. But you're completely dismissing it altogether, and that is super lame, super safe. I want to know who you think is better because it's fun.
Here's the thing, Robert. Let me say this. The biggest flaw in the debate to me is if you look and you watch The Last Dance and you look at Michael Jordan day one when he came into the league and you look at him at the end, look at how much his body changed, right? You look at LeBron, how much his body changed over the course of it. Both of these great athletes managed to adapt their bodies and their physicality to what they needed to for the NBA in that moment. The reason they can't be compared to me is because I think either of them in either era would have done whatever it takes to be equally successful. I don't think one is demonstrably better than the other. They're just both great players, and to try and take one and make one better than the other based on championship appearances doesn't work for me in a team sport. It's not an individual sport. So why am I going to give Michael all the credit for, in fact, losing in the playoffs, which he did several times? It just didn't happen to be in the championship round. So why does that give less, why does that have more value than LeBron going out and losing in the finals with trash teammates?
Well, cause dude, what are you talking about? You think Chris Bosh was freaking trash and D-Wade? Come on, man.
No. But you think those Cavs teams were any good? And would you put those Cavs teams anywhere near where Michael Jordan and the Bulls teams were?
Yeah, well, listen. MJ knew how to keep a team together, knew how to be a leader. He's not going around trying to create super teams. He knew how to keep his Batman to his Robin.
Again, you're shifting the argument, though, Robert, because even if you want to say that MJ knew how to keep players together, it wasn't an empowered era. Scottie Pippen had to sit around unhappy with his contract. Do you genuinely believe if Scottie Pippen had that exact contract situation in today's NBA, he would play a single second and not force a trade?
Irrelevant, because he could have had.
But that's
Kyrie.
Completely relevant to the point you just made of Michael Jordan keeping a team together. Michael Jordan didn't keep the team together. The NBA culture of the moment kept the team together versus today, where players simply go in and say, "Nah, I don't want to play with this guy. I don't want to play with that guy. I'm going to play over here." Like that you're holding LeBron to a standard when the league has changed the way it does business.
Why did Kyrie not want to stay with him, man? Why was LeBron not a better leader and wanted to keep him there or make him want to stay there?
Well, why did Horace Grant not want to play with Michael Jordan? I mean, like, there were trades that went through the course of it. But again, so what? Kyrie didn't want to play. You think, in today's world where players can play where they want to, you think most of those guys that we got a real sense during The Last Dance didn't particularly like Michael Jordan? You think that they're suddenly going to turn around and just take that behavior? They don't anymore.
I don't know, man. Whatever he did worked, dude. And I mean, come on, you got to give him credit. Now you could be friends with your teammates, and LeBron couldn't be Kyrie's friend and make him stay. You know what I mean? Like, it's,
well, but Kyrie also left Boston. Robert, I love the debate, but this is why the debate is meaningless, because you can shift any portion of this argument to be what you want it to be. It's like stats. You find the stats that you like, and you find the stats that support your argument, and you only use those. That's what it feels like we do when we do the MJ versus LeBron debate, because frankly, they're both amazing players, and you have arguably the two best players of each of their generations, and you're trying to make these comparisons, but nobody's doing that with Bill Russell and Michael Jordan. Like, we're holding NBA to a strange standard, and we're just burying the lead here. We're going to keep taking your take on the best player in the NBA right now. You'll hear who it is. Plus, we'll take your take on who you want to build franchises around next.